We're in this series called Churchology, and you were like, Mitch, you promised me like hot and spicy sermons when we started this whole thing, and I don't feel like we've been very hot and spicy yet. I promise you we're getting there, but it is extremely important that we understand the foundation of who we are as a church before we get into the hot and spicy things. So, like, for example, we've been talking about we are a church, we are a body, right? We exist as a body. Your faith and your sanctification and your walk with the Lord is not a solo journey, at least not only a solo journey. You must exist in community. If you read through scripture, especially if you read through Acts 2:42, it is impossible to look at our walk with Christ as an individual thing alone. We exist as a body. And then last week, what we talked about was that we as a body are looking forward to something greater than what this earth can provide us with, right? This is not our final home. This is not our final destination. We are looking forward to the glorification of our bodies and reunification with the Father. Amen? And then as we're here, if we don't have the Holy Spirit, none of this stuff matters. And none of the stuff we're going to talk about in the next couple weeks matters if we don't talk about the Holy Spirit, okay? So we're laying the foundation. We're going to have an awesome message next week on Mother's Day. And then after Mother's Day, I promise you, it's going to get spicy, okay? We're going to talk about money. We're going to talk about pastors thinking that they're kings. We're going to talk about churches that want to entertain you more than teach you about Christ. We're going to talk about traditions of men versus traditions of the church. I promise you, it's going to get spicy. I don't know why I chose spicy. I just keep thinking spicy. I got food on the brain. I'm going to continue the food metaphor throughout this. But talking about being served something that you didn't expect and that was maybe a little disappointing to you, and maybe that was just because of the way it was described on the menu. Maybe you're like, oh, I know what that is, and then you get it, and you're like, that's not what I think that is. Or maybe somebody told you they were making you something, and you're like, that's not what I want. You know, I was just having a conversation with Vicky the other day, and we were talking about chicken and dumplings. And she was like, but only if the dumplings are the lumps of dough. And I'm like, no, chicken and dumplings, you have to have the flat little sheets. That's real chicken and dumplings. And if somebody served me the big hunks of dough, I'd be like, that's not chicken and dumplings. I'd be disappointed, okay? But if you've ever been served something and it was just because it wasn't the way you expected, or you're like, ooh, that is just not my vibe, it makes me think of when I went to India. I was there for about a month on like a missions trip, and there was a guy who was with me who was just having a rough time. Every single meal we had in India, every single meal was curry, rice, and dal, which is just like lentils. Every meal, curry, rice, and dal. Now, sometimes it was goat curry, sometimes it was potato curry, sometimes it was green lentils, and sometimes it was red lentils, but every meal we had was curry, rice, and dal. And this guy I was with, I'll let him remain nameless, but he was like having a rough time. He's like, Mitch, not only do I not like Indian food, I don't like eating the same Indian food every single day. And I was like, man, I was like having a blast. I was like, this is amazing. I love all of this stuff. This is wonderful. But he's just having a rough time. He's like, my stomach can't take anymore. He's just like, he's having a hard time. And so we have been staying in like orphanages, and we've been camping and just staying in these random places because we were traveling a good bit. And one day our guide is telling us, hey, we're going to go stay in a more westernized hotel. Now, compared to anything in Huntsville, it is not Western to any degree. It is just more Western than sleeping on the ground outside. And so they're like, we're going to sleep in a more westernized hotel, and we're going to have like a westernized breakfast when we wake up. And so me and him were sharing a room, and he's like, dude, I can't wait. Finally, we're going to have some Western food. This is going to be so good. Like, I haven't eaten. I haven't felt nourished because I'm just so sick of eating all this food. So we wake up in the morning, and we go on top of this hotel on the rooftop to have breakfast. And I say rooftop breakfast, and you're thinking like penthouse. It wasn't what you think. Like, it's just, we're overlooking a city that is slummy, and like, it's not glorious and glamorous, but it was neat. And so we're sitting on top of this rooftop hotel, and our guide is like, hey, can we just order kind of like the same thing for everybody so it's easier, it comes out faster, there's a lot of us. And we're like, yeah, that's fine. He's like, all right, so we're going to order omelets, toast, and chai. And I was like, that sounds good to me. I'm down. And so my buddy next to me, he's like, oh my gosh, I can't wait. Like, we're going to eat omelets. Like, I just want to eat omelets and toast. So they bring the omelets out, and you would not recognize it as an omelet. There were eggs, and there were tomatoes, and there were also those tiny little green chili peppers that are about as thin as your pinky. Tons of them. There was garam masala, like cinnamon and clove and ginger all throughout the eggs. Like, if I gave you this omelet, you'd be like, that's not an omelet. Like, that's not an omelet. And so he's like already frustrated. They did bring us white toast, But the jam was some fruit that I had never had. None of us could identify the jars in Hindi, and none of us read Hindi. So we're like, I don't know what this is. And then they bring us chai, and you're like, well, chai, you know, we all have chai, right? This is not Starbucks chai. This is not you bought Tazo or whatever from Kroger. Somebody picks it up and smells it, and they go, oh. And I'm like, what? He's like, it's savory. We're like, what do you mean it's savory? And you drink it, it's spicy. It has so much black pepper in it, it burns. And so my buddy is just like he is just fuming. And I'm like, we are on a missions trip right now. Like, you need to like get it together, man. Like, he is just fuming. But he's like, Mitch, you don't understand. I'm like, I spent all night fantasizing and looking forward to omelets and toast, and then we get this, and it's just a massive disappointment to me. And I was like, yeah, I mean, I get that. And sometimes life is like that. Sometimes you're like, man, I can't wait to get this new job, and then you get at the new job, and you're like, this ain't it. Like, this is not what I was expecting. Or sometimes you move to Huntsville, right? And you move to Huntsville, and you're like, ooh. Now, frankly, I love it here. But, you know, I know that people come here, and they're like, ooh, this was not what I expected. We don't have a Whole Foods. Like, I'm like, it's like, no, but we have a Berkshire Brothers, and they have fried chicken. Like, come on. You know. Or maybe you just got married, or you've been married for a little bit, and you're like, this isn't what, like, the Bachelorette said it would be. Like, this is not what marriage, like, you're just disappointed, and you find yourself being served dishes that you're like, I'm looking forward to this, and then you get this opportunity, this plate set in front of you, and you go, ooh, that's not really what I was expecting. That's not really what I wanted. And in those moments, it's not that you just don't like what's in front of you. You also don't even know how to move forward. Again, when my friend's dad set that plate of sunny side up eggs in front of me, it wasn't just that I didn't want them. It was also like, I don't even know what to do with this right now. Like, I don't even know how to handle this. Like, I can't, in the depth of my southern soul, can't be like, I can't eat this. Like, I just had to figure out, what do I do now? And so when life doesn't match your expectations, you don't just feel disappointed. You feel kind of lost. You're like, I've been given this, but like, I don't know how to move forward. And so when you don't know what to say, when you don't know what to pray, Paul shows us in Romans 8 that that is exactly where the Spirit steps in to transform our hearts. And so that's where we're at today. We're going to jump through Romans 8 all the way through verse, I believe, 31. But right now, I'm going to just jump into Romans 8, 26 through 27, talking about what do we do when we're handed things in life that ultimately disappoint us. Verse 26, in the same way, the Spirit helps us in our weakness. We do not know what we ought to pray for, but the Spirit himself intercedes for us through wordless groans. And he who searches our hearts knows the mind of the Spirit, because the Spirit intercedes for God's people in accordance to the will of God. Now, in that first verse, it talks about the Spirit helps us in our weakness. Now, sometimes that weakness is our suffering, but sometimes that weakness is simply a limited understanding. Sometimes that weakness is like, whoa, Lord, you said it was going to be like this, but this is how it is. Or, Lord, I expected it to go this way, and now here it is. And so now I feel weak because I don't know what to do. And so think about it, like, anytime you're served something and you express your frustration in wordless groans, if somebody sent you something and they gave you a plate, you went to their house and they served you something and you're disgusted by it, you would express that disgust by going, ugh. Or if somebody served you something and you're like expecting it to look one way, but it actually looks another, you would go, oh. Or if somebody serves you something and it just simply isn't what you've been used to and you're confused, you would go, huh? Like, we have all of these tones that when my friend's dad set those eggs in front of me, I'm sure I went, oh, which was an expression of, this isn't what I expected. I think this is kind of gross. But there's too much politeness in me to tell you that I can't eat it. So now I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to choke this down so that you don't feel offended. But all of that is summarized in, oh. And so sometimes the best we can muster in our prayers are just these wordless groans that express a much deeper meaning than what we actually let out. And the beautiful thing about that is when we don't have these perfect articulations of what we say is that God hears exactly what you mean, not just what you say. And so sometimes you're asking for relief, but what the Spirit is interceding for is your transformation. And so like I said, I found the food in India incredible. I loved it. It was a wonderful adventure for me. And the thing is, that black pepper chai, when I first smelled it, to me it went, ooh, that's not what I'm used to. But two nights previously, all of the beds in the cottage were taken up and they asked me, they're like, Mitch, do you mind if you go camp outside in the tent? And I was like, yeah, I don't mind. So we're in the northern part of India near Nepal. We're up in the mountains and it gets really cold, but like, I didn't know that. And so I'm like, sure, I'll camp in the tent. I'm dressed in like shorts and a t-shirt and I have like a sheet. And so I go lay down in the tent and I wake up in the middle of the night and I'm freezing. And so, you know, I do that whole like I wrap myself. There was a rug that was on the outside of the tent for our feet. I brought it inside and I like pulled it up to where it's like here to here. I'm like, well, at least part of me is covered, you know? So I'm like, I'm doing this thing. And I wake up and my face is pressed against the tent and there is ice on the outside of the tent. And so I wake up with that like, you know, every time you swallow and you're like, I know I'm getting sick right now. Like I can tell I'm getting sick. You know, the inside of my ears hurt. And I'm like, okay, I'm not feeling good. And so like the whole rest of that day, the day we're going to the hotel, my throat is kind of killing me. I'm feeling like I have kind of a head cold. We sit down in that breakfast. I smell that chai and I'm like, not really my cup of tea. But can I tell you, I drank that chai and it burned in the best way possible down my throat. They live in the mountains of India, so they put a lot of black pepper in their chai because they're often so cold. It's nice to have that little bit of burning. And for my sore throat, it was like, oh man, this is exactly what I needed to feel better, was this hot, sweet, milky black pepper chai. It was incredible. And so the difference between me and my buddy wasn't what was in front of us, but it was how we chose to receive what was in front of us. And so sometimes in life, it may not be what you expect, but trusting God serves you because it shows you exactly what you need. God is going to put in front of you exactly what you need. And so in the next couple of verses, it's talking about like the Spirit intercedes for us, right? In accordance to the will of God. And so the Spirit isn't just translating your prayers for you. He's transforming your prayers. And so in another verse in scripture, it talks about Jesus interceding on behalf of us, right? Like Jesus prays for us. But when we're praying, when we have these wordless groans, the Spirit isn't just coming to you and going, oh, I'm so sorry, you didn't like what you were served. Let me take this back to the kitchen. No, what the Spirit is doing, he's transforming our prayers for our hearts to see that this may not be what you asked for, but it's exactly what you need. You may start groaning and saying like, oh my gosh, like I can't believe like this is the job that you called me to, Lord, and now it looks like this. Are you serious? Like, what is this supposed to be? Like, this was not meeting my expectations, and God's not in heaven going, oh, I'm so sorry to disappoint you that you didn't like what was on the menu. God is saying, let me show you, you need this right now. This is exactly what you need. So the Spirit is transforming them, transforming our prayers to fit within the will of God. And that's what Paul's talking about in verse 28. This is a verse that many of you are probably familiar with, where it talks about God working all things together for his good, right? It says, and we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called to his purpose. This is really important. You should read this in context with verse 29. It says, for those who he foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his son, that he might be the firstborn among many brothers and sisters. And so many of us read this verse, or I've heard people quote it to me, and it's like, oh man, I'm just having a hard time in life and I just don't know what to do. And people are like, oh, well, God works all things together for good. So get over it, you know? And it's like, that's not helpful at all. For one, we need to understand what good means. And two, we need to understand what is the purpose of that good. So one, what is good? For us, good for us is like, oh, well, I want to be comfortable. I want this to be easy. I want to get what I want when I want, right? That is good. But sometimes good doesn't mean that for you. according to verse 29, good is us being conformed into the image of God. That is our greatest good, is us to look more like Jesus. And so that means that some of the things that God is using for your good doesn't always feel good or look good. Sometimes you'll be dealt disappointment. Sometimes you're going to experience delay. Things are taking longer than you want them to. Sometimes you're going to experience loss. And you're like, this doesn't feel good. But that doesn't mean that God cannot use those things for his good. You know, like I said, I love Huntsville. We've lived here like 9 months now, and it is just the best. I can't rave enough about it. Sitting outside yesterday, Arno's eating crawfish, hanging out with people like, just Lord have mercy. Can I ask for a better time? And it was like 55. You know, it's just like, can't get that in Huntsville. Weather is totally different down there. It's just like a hellscape. I don't know what's wrong with people. No, I'm just kidding. Nobody's laughing at all. I don't know why that's like, yeah, you don't have to give me a pity laugh. I don't miss Huntsville. I mean, I don't miss Conroe. I love Huntsville. Did I say Huntsville? Is that why I scared you? Sorry. I'm just so wrapped up and I just love Huntsville so much, you know. But as we've lived here in Huntsville, one of the things that is still in my mind about Conroe is that our house in Conroe still has not sold. And like, we planned when we bought a house here in Huntsville, we're like, hey, we know, like, we're going to sell our house in Conroe and it's going to sell for about this price and it'll probably take about this long, right? Well, we're getting to the end of that projection, right? And so Bree and I were sitting down the other night and we're like, okay, so like, it's not selling at the price that we wanted to, and it's certainly not selling within the time frame we wanted to. So like, what are we going to do? And so we start looking at, you know, just budgeting and changing things and just shifting our mindset. And like, we're praying about it and like, we feel okay about it. But you know, it's just like, wow, this isn't what I expected. Like, this isn't going the way that I hoped. This isn't the way that I wanted it to happen. And so Bree and I talk about it, and I'm walking down the hallway. I'm going back to my office, and I just felt like the Spirit like drive me to my knees, and I'm sitting there praying, and I was like, you know, Lord, like, my definition of good right now is for that house to sell at a high price and yesterday. But like, Lord, if you're doing something in me, if waiting on you, if this house not selling in the way that I thought it should and the time I thought it should, if that is a part of my sanctification that's going to make me a better man, a better pastor, a better husband, a better father, then Lord, don't take that opportunity away from me. Like, not my will, Lord, but your will be done. Like, I have my own definition of good and the way that things should go. And right now, those expectations aren't being met. And so, Lord, I'm going to have to adjust and say, well, Lord, I trust you more than I trust myself. And so, Lord, if this is your will, then have it be done. Because God's definition of good in this process, I think, is teaching me to trust him more, to be in a space of formation and transformation where it's like, even if it doesn't go the way that you want, can you trust God in handling it? And oftentimes the problem may not be what you've been served or the circumstances you find yourself in, but that you don't necessarily know what you need. God is not serving our preferences. He's preparing our transformation. I want you to jump to Ezekiel 36. We're going to read through 22 and through 32, but I'm going to kind of like pick out some of them. We're not going to read all the way through them. So guys, if you'll throw up 36:22, it's at the very end of 22. Go to the next one. Says, It is not for your sake, O house of Israel, that I am about to act, but for the sake of my holy name. We have to remember that, like, this whole thing is not about us. This whole book is not about us. This is about the Lord God, who has graciously allowed us to come in and participate with him. We get to live a life because of all that he's done for us. But this is not about us. This is not our story. This is the story of God and his will and his redemption of the world. And so we have to humble ourselves and remember, God is not doing this for our sake necessarily, but he's doing it for his sake and his glory. Go to the end of verse 23, guys. It says, and the nations will know. Perfect. And the nations will know that I am the Lord, declares the Lord, when through you I vindicate my holiness before their eyes. So what God is saying is that my glory is my glory, and I do these things for my glory, and I'm going to allow you to participate in a way that you help vindicate my enemies. I think about the story of Job, you know, and Satan's like, man, God, Job only worships you because you give him everything he wants. And God goes, no, Job would worship me no matter what, because Job actually loves me and trusts me. And Satan's like, do you want to put that to a bet? Like, let's see what happens. And so God allows Job to experience all of these things through the power of Satan wrecking his life. And Job's friends are shaming Job, and they're like, certainly there's hidden sin in your life. Certainly you've done something wrong. Even Job's wife is like, dude, curse God and die. Like, you are going through it. You have got to just give up. And Job responds, and he says, Lord, though you slay me, I will still worship you. My hope will still be tied up in you. And what Job is communicating is, Lord, I trust you beyond any circumstance in my life. I trust you beyond anything I can see or have control over. Lord, I trust you, and I know that you have my greater good in mind. And so through that, the Lord's glory is vindicated against his enemies, because God's saying, like, see, I told you. Like, God, Job knows that I love him. Job knows that I have his greatest good in mind, and he puts the enemy to shame. Verse 25 says, I will sprinkle clean water on you, and you shall be clean from all your uncleanliness, and from all of your idols I will cleanse you. God's idea of good is not just making your life easier, but it's making your heart clean, making you clean and new, more like Christ. Verse 26, and I will give you a new heart, and a new spirit I will put within you, and I will remove a heart of stone from you and give you a heart of flesh, and I will put my spirit within you and cause you to walk in my statutes and be careful to obey my rules. I love the fact that it uses that language. And I will cause you, meaning God's like, my will be done. Whether you want to participate or not, it will be done. I think about God's kind of like, you're being put on the Jesus diet. This is what is being served up. It makes me think of, my dad told me this story. My dad grew up pretty poor. My grandmother had like odd jobs growing up, or while my dad was growing up. My grandfather was a baker, never made a ton of money. And so one day my dad came home. He has an older sibling and a younger sibling, and they all sit down at the dinner table. And my grandmother was serving pinto beans and cornbread. And I was like, that sounds great. But my dad was like, oh my gosh, I don't want to eat pinto beans and cornbread. Like, my grandmother's like, that's fine, you don't have to eat it. And so my dad's like, okay, fine, good, I'm not going to eat it. Next day he comes home, guess what's for dinner? Pinto beans and cornbread. And my dad's like, what is this, some kind of joke? Like, what are you? And my grandmother's like, you don't have to eat it. And my dad's like, okay. And he's like a little more confused at this point. And he's like, okay. I mean, he doesn't eat that night, I guess. I can't remember if he like made a peanut butter and jelly or something, probably not. And then the next night he comes home, and guess what's for dinner? Leftover pinto beans and cornbread. And about that time, my dad went, okay, I'm either going to eat these pinto beans and cornbread, or I'm going to starve, basically, is what's going to happen. And I don't know how many more nights my grandmother would have served that meal, but I promise you it would have been a minimum of 6 months. Like, my grandmother, like, stubborn. Like, it would have happened. And so I think my dad knew that, and he decided, you know, I'm going to move forward, and I'm just going to allow what's being served to me to be served to me. And so here's the thing. God has given you circumstances. God has served you plates into your life. And you have all willpower to resist. You can push that plate away and say, I'm not eating that. I'm not putting up with that. That's not my preference. I don't want to go through with that. You may find yourself in a conflict with somebody where God is clearly prompting you to reconcile. You may find yourself in a marriage that is not what you expected, and you're like, I could get out of here if I wanted to. You're more than welcome to do those things. You can. You can push that plate away from you, but it will just simply grow colder and more bitter the longer you choose to wait and indulge in it. The Lord is serving you what you need, not what you want. Sometimes he does. Sometimes you get blessed with that, where your needs and your wants and everything else line up with God's, and it's happy-go-lucky. But sometimes God is giving you what's going to bring you nourishment, not just what's going to make you feel better. You read the verse 31 and verse 32, and we'll jump back into this. It says, then you will remember your evil ways and your deeds that were not good, and you will loathe yourselves for the iniquities and your abominations. It is not for your sake that I will act, declares the Lord God. The Lord is just reiterating, like, my will is going to be done. You can choose to participate, or you can choose to rebel in that. And I know that maybe sounds kind of harsh, but again, I think we need to humble ourselves and remember, like, he is the God of the universe. He's the reason that you have life. And so we can either choose to humble ourselves and accept that he knows what's best for us, or we can kick and scream like children and demand our own way. You know, I'm talking about our house not selling. My definition of good was at a high price and quick. And God's definition of good was trust, dependence, and formation. You know, my son Hezekiah wants candy. He thinks that's his greatest good, is to be jacked up on sugar every single day of his life. He is just constantly asking for candy. Everything he does, I clean up my room, can I have candy? I got home from school, can I have candy? I took a nap, can I have candy? Like, he just wants candy all the time. And if I gave Hezekiah what he wanted, when he wanted, he would be a wreck. He would be sick. He would have no energy. His teeth would be rotten out of his cute little head. Like, if I just said, sure, I'm just going to give you whatever you want, whenever you want it, it would wreck his life, and I would be a terrible father. I'm not trying to give him what he wants. I'm trying to give him what he needs, because love doesn't give what's requested. Love gives what is right. Love is going to deliver you exactly what you actually need, but not always what you want. I was thinking about the show, My 600-Pound Life. Like, it is a sight to behold. And I remember one particular episode, there's a wife who is over 600 pounds, and then she has a husband who is like skinny as a rake, like just a rail, like thin, super thin. And he's bringing her like everything she wants, like McDonald's, Hot Pockets, whatever. Like, she's consuming the amount of calories that three grown men, or maybe like two Corys, would consume in like one day. Like, you, like, just so much food. And like, even the producers are asking him, like, brother, what are you doing? Like, why are you enabling your wife? Like, you're the one that called the show. Like, you're concerned about her, and yet you're the one that's feeding her all this food and getting her all this stuff. Like, what are you doing? He's like, you know, I want her to be happy. Like, I want her to feel loved. That's not love. Like, that's not loving. And honestly, like, sometimes your happiness has to take a backseat to your healthiness. And that's clear physically. We all know that. We all, okay, I should go to the gym more. Like, I should do all these things. That's the same thing spiritually. Spiritually, some of us have just been consuming McNuggets and fries, and we're like, gee, I don't know why I feel so terrible and why I'm so spiritually out of shape. And then we ask God, God, give me a new diet. Give me a way that's going to help me spiritually. And God goes, okay, well, here's what you need to eat. And you go, well, I don't want that. Well, I don't want that then. And God's like, well, this is what you need if you want to get better. And you're like, I'll just stay sick and mad then. Like, and then we spend years frustrated at the Lord because we refuse to consume the thing that we know that's going to make us better. We insist that we know better than him. I love this. This is somewhat relevant. I just thought of this meme this guy is talking about. He's exhausted. He's like, oh my gosh, I just can't get enough sleep. Like, I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, I just feel like I'm dragging throughout the day. I'm drinking so much caffeine. And somebody's like, why don't you just go to bed 8 hours before you need to get up? And he's like, absolutely not. That's ridiculous. Why would I do that? Like, that's how we respond to the Lord. Is like, Lord, my heart is aching. I'm crushed. I don't know what to do in these circumstances. I'm yearning after you. I'm directionless. I'm lost. Lord, do something. And Lord's like, okay, here's what you need to do. And we look at it and go, ooh, I don't want to do that. And Lord's like, I'm serving the same thing tomorrow night. So whatever you want to start consuming, what's going to make you better, you let me know. And I know that's easier said than done, because I know that, again, those people will tell you like, oh, all things work together for the good of those who love him. It's fine. But it's another thing when you're in the middle of it. You're looking at the situation. You're looking at the plate in front of you. You're looking at the circumstances, and you're like, this is not what I expected. And you have to start wondering, like, is this actually going to turn out the way that it's supposed to? Because we don't have the full picture, and it's difficult to judge whether or not we can trust based on everything just in front of us, right? But let Romans 8:30 bring you some comfort. It says, and those he predestined, he also called. Those who he called, he also justified. And those who he justified, he also glorified. You notice, like, this is completion language. This is all written in past tense. There's a reason, because in the Greek, grammatically, what's happening here is he's saying, like, once this first thing happens, this last thing must come to an end. Like, this has to be completed. This is not like you could do one or two and then stop at justified. No, once you are called, you will be seen through all the way to the end. All the way to the end. God is saying, like, once my will starts rolling, it's going to happen. God is going to complete what he started. And I know some of you are worried about, like, well, is he going to come through? Like, is it going to be the way I thought? You're just in the middle of it. But I promise you, God is working, and he will see his work to completion. One last story. My roommate and I were helping our friend John, and I think John's last name is Farrelly. He was from New Jersey. He's from New Jersey. We're going to help him move out of his parents' house, and we're helping him move couches and beds and stuff. And John's dad from New Jersey's last name's Farrelly. He comes downstairs. He goes, "Hey, boys, let me make you a turkey sandwich." And we're like, "No, that's okay, Mr. Farrelly. Like, we're not really hungry." He's like, "Oh, come on, boys. Let me make you a turkey sandwich. I'll make you a turkey sandwich. You're working real hard. You know, come on, let me make you a turkey sandwich." And we're like, "Mr. Farrelly, like, it's fine. Like, we don't really need a turkey sandwich." And like, so we're moving stuff. And every 5 to 10 minutes, Mr. Farrelly is like, "Come on, boys, let me make you a turkey sandwich." Like, come on. Gabagool. You know, he's like, "Come on, like, let me make you a turkey sandwich." And I was like, is this like a mob thing? Like, am I being, like, do I have to say yes? Is this sort of, you know? And so me and Aaron are like, "Okay, fine, Mr. Farrelly, like, sure, go make us a turkey sandwich. That's fine. I don't really even want one, but like, if you're gonna force me, like, sure, I'll eat a turkey sandwich." And so he leaves, we keep moving, and I think we even get done. And he's gone longer than it takes to make a turkey sandwich. And I'm just like, man, what is going on? He comes back downstairs, he's like, "Ah, we didn't have any turkey." So, so I was like, so he makes us a lettuce and tomato sandwich. And I was just like, I feel like when I resisted a lot, and you could have just said, okay, but. And so then at that point, I'm just kind of eating it out of like pity for him. But I'm just kind of like, well, now I kind of want a turkey sandwich because like you promised me one. And like, then you couldn't even deliver. And so some of you may feel like you're in the midst of a situation where you kind of feel abandoned or you feel forgotten, and you're sitting here waiting. You're like, "God, like, are you going to do this thing that you said? Like, you gave me this vision and this promise for the future, and I don't see it yet. Like, God, did you run out of turkey? Like, have you forgotten about me? Like, what is happening?" And you're wondering, like, are you still working? Are you still going to do these things? And you have to recognize Isaiah 55, this is the Lord speaking. He says, "So shall my words be that goes out from my mouth. It shall not return to me empty, but it shall accomplish that which I purpose and shall succeed in the thing for which I sent it." If this isn't just like layman's terms, God says, if I say it, you can take it to the bank. If I say it, it's going to happen. If I say it, it will come to completion. And if you're sitting there worrying and you're like, well, is it going to happen? God's like, I'm just in the middle of cooking, baby. I'm slicing the tomatoes, okay? Like, all you have to do is be patient and trust me. And you're like, Lord, that's not the way that I've made turkey sandwiches. That doesn't look the way that I expected. And he goes, trust me, this is going to be the best turkey sandwich you've ever had. This is going to be a turkey sandwich you didn't know that you needed, but it's exactly what you needed, okay? I promise you, God has never abandon a work that he has started. And our sanctification and our glorification is not just a possibility. It is a promise. It will happen. It will come to fruition. You may find yourself sitting at a table and you're served a dish that is just not what you expected. Like, you may be in a marriage that is not the way you wanted it to be, at a job that you didn't expect it to be, in a house you didn't expect it to look that way. But I promise you, God has not left you at the table alone. He will see it to completion. And so, if that's true, if the Spirit helps us in our groanings, if we're allowed to just kind of be like, oh, God, what is happening? If we know that God is working, even when we don't understand what he's doing, and if he's committed to finishing what he started, then the question for us becomes, how do we actually live that out? And as the band comes up here, I want to give you really three quick, simple ways to do it. One, you have to be honest about how you're feeling. You have to be honest about the things you're struggling with. Like, God already knows what you mean when you're praying. Like, you don't have to have these perfectly articulated prayers. Like, so stop trying to clean up your prayer life. Like, just pray. He says that the Spirit intercedes for us when we're just groaning. So if all you've got for God are groans of disappointment, frustration, or confusion, then do that. God hears what you actually mean, not just what you say. So stop being like, oh man, I don't pray like this person or that person, so I don't even know if I should try. God knows your heart and knows exactly what you mean when you're praying it. So be honest. Two, surrender your expectations. God is not serving your preference. He's preparing you for transformation. When I got those eggs put in front of me, that was not what I expected. But at the moment, it was what was best for me to maintain that relationship. And now I love sunny side up eggs. That's how I eat them anyway now. So you never know, okay? And then three, choose to trust God in the process. What God starts, God will finish. And so in the middle of your life, when it doesn't make sense, when it doesn't feel good, when it's not what you expected, you have a choice. You can either reject what's in front of you, or you can trust the one who prepared it. And next week, we're gonna take this even deeper, because it's one thing to trust that God is working, but it's another thing to stay close to him while he's doing it. And so the last line I wanna give you before we go, the thing I want you to think about and focus on and pray on, is I know that there are plenty of you in here that you've been served a plate that you may not have wanted. It may not look the way that you expected. It may be just be like, man, this is not the way that I was expecting things to go. I really had this grand idea. Lord, I feel like you've called me to more than what's in front of me. And what you need to understand is the plate in front of you may not be what you wanted, but in the hands of God, it is exactly what you need.